Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, May 12th, 2011. And there's no way I'm going to get through all of the material I have to cover tonight. Many, many topics, so I will get right into it here. Let me start by saying this. There has been just an avalanche of predictions of dates of doom. And yesterday, March 11th, there had been a prediction and an entire flurry of internet activity regarding earthquakes in Italy. And, of course, Italy is one of the more earthquake-prone areas of the world. It ranks right up there, 20 earthquakes a day, not being uncommon in some areas, but not big, just your average shakes, you know, and they're used to it. I mean, you're drinking your coffee and it's shaking, and so... The situation, and I've been in places where there were, especially through the tropics and various places, where there are many earthquakes, 10 to 20 earthquakes a day, and it just becomes part of everyday life. And you hope every time you feel one that the big one is not about to hit. And there are areas all over the world where big earthquakes are imminent. They're going to happen. Italy is one. The Puerto Rican Trench is one. Peru, the South America along the Andes, Japan. You know, these are all earthquake-prone areas. But the prediction was by a guy who has since deceased, but the prediction was that March 11th, 2011, which was yesterday, there would be an unprecedented earthquake in a very certain area of Italy. And, well, as it turned out, that did not happen. The Italian government apparently went to great lengths to try and dispel this, but the people left the area in great numbers. So, and I find this kind of psychology very interesting. Okay, rumor begins. People spread it on the internet. Fear grows. People leave the area just because of the amount of hype that's going on. Really, nobody knows whether professionals or this guy that predicted it long ago, and apparently he had predicted an earthquake back in the early 1920s or something, and it came true. And so anyway, his word became somewhat... believable, so to speak, because there was a prediction. There was a prediction or an earthquake yesterday in Spain, but this guy predicted a very specific spot in Italy. And by the way, a lot of earthquake predictors out there will make a prediction, like a broad prediction, like the west coast of the United States or something like that, or Japan. Well, on any given day, that could be true. And so then they try and gain notoriety, and if it doesn't come true, then they just kind of slide away and don't say anything without keeping a record. But at any rate, the bottom line is Italy did not have its major earthquake yesterday. But the psychology is very interesting because then, see, the government comes in and through the standard news media tries to say, don't worry, there's no problem. Our scientists tell you that nobody can predict earthquakes and there's nothing to worry about. But that very statement fuels the fear. And so if you have something like Planet X or this, all of the crazy stuff that is going on with Comet Ellen, and I'll be talking a little bit about that. I'm not going to waste my show on that more Comet Ellen issues other than to say it's a non-issue. And that, by the way, is a very well-orchestrated disinformation campaign targeted to destroy my name and my work. And it was started many years ago. But anyway, I'm not going to go into a lot of that. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But all I'm saying is that when the government comes in and tries to smooth it over and say, oh, don't worry about that, nothing's going to happen, it actually fuels the fear in people because nobody believes the government. Then, you know, the government makes it look like they're trying to hide something, because the only time the government's going to say something is if they're lying. And so, I mean, the lack of credibility of government is a major issue here around the world, not just in the good old U.S. of A. So I want to make that point. That's the biggest point to be learned from the Italy earthquake predictions, is that, in fact, the lack of credibility of the government and government scientists, I might add, fuels the fear that they're trying to quell. Okay, let's see, announcements, just in general about many dates being thrown out there. And this happens every May and June. I don't know if it's just when all the nutcases come out of the closet, but it's when a lot of disinformation comes out also. This has happened for years and years. It's the standard May to June set of crazy people coming out of the woodwork, and a lot of these people are fueled by government, let's say, backdoor funding or backdoor support of many kinds. And why is May and June seem to be the month of choice for disinformation and dates of doom? Well, I think it all goes back to the 1980s and the early 1990s when Harrington was in the New Zealand taking pictures of what he claimed was Planet X coming in from the southern part of the solar system, and died on his way back to the U.S., and his pictures and data were never published, which just once again fuels the fire of Planet X hysteria, you might say it that way. As far as Planet X is concerned and the reality of Planet X, Velikovsky talked about a major comet coming into the solar system, and it became the planet Venus. When I did my work at Cornell and I realized that comets were not dirty snowballs and that the astrophysics, space science, astronomy community was completely, completely out of it, had no clue what was going on, had no clue what the data was saying that were coming back from spacecraft, that was coming back from all sorts of sources, that the reality is that the government scientists started on a road of unbelievability, which they have continued to march down, and the story gets really out of control. But then you throw in the disinformation crew, but the point is that I think the May June time of year stems from that, that it was in those months that the only time that you can see that southern part of the solar system, because understand that part of the Earth is pointing away from the sun, it's in eternal darkness, and that's the only time you can get a really good view of it. I've gone through this information before. Even if you're in New Zealand, you don't have that great a view of the southern sky, the direct southern view of the sky. That's about 23 degrees off of straight down as far as the solar system is concerned, and in a direction away from the sun. So you have to get, you have to get really down to the South Pole to get that view. And it's always been interesting that there's just a myriad number of telescopes, major professional grade telescopes of all types at the South Pole, and not any at the North Pole. Gee, I guess there's nothing going on in the northern sky. So that anyway, just some strange issues there. But dates of doom and crashing things into Earth, May and June seem to be the time of choice. And remember the May 15, 2003 Planet X crazy lady talks to aliens. All of that month of May and June, it just never ends. Okay, but that's the other thing. I think that if something does come into the solar system from the south, only visible in the month of May and June, they've already got the hype, the people expecting this wave of misinformation, and it's like flak. Remember in World War II, that the Germans would throw up a lot of flak, and the bombing raids would have to try and fly through that. So it's the same issue, the exact same issue. Just a quick announcement on the food items. The freeze-dried food, some of it is still going out to customers, the grab-and-go buckets. A lot of this has been shipped, and the remaining will be shipped in about the next week. So appreciate people's patience. This has been a trying time for all of us. And I actually took those products off my webpage because I just wanted to clear out all orders and get all of that done, and that's what's going on. I don't foresee having those products back. Just too complicated an area to try and deal with. If it ever did in a manner in which I could be assured of having the stuff sitting there and then sell only a certain amount that was sitting there, and when that was done and that could be shipped right away, that's the only way I will deal with that in the future. As far as flax is concerned, I temporarily pulled it off my web page because of increasing shipping costs. We're trying to figure out how to exactly manage this. We're not going to be doing any shipping of heavy items, food items, in the future if I bring them back. By the way, flax will come back probably as a product. It's something that I really think people need out there. We just have to work out this shipping cost issue. In a lot of the products, I actually lose money. Say, for example, the grinder and the books, I actually lose money when those are sent out. But I do that because then the people have the correct information and the correct products. But the real goal there is to sell cases of flax, which many people do, and they buy many cases. So at any rate, the flax will be back soon, as soon as we work out the shipping cost issues. Regarding the pre-filter, we're catching up on those. I think almost everything to about a week ago has probably shipped out and is on its way. So that was just a tremendously difficult time, but worked out a lot better than last August when I originally introduced the pre-filter. Something that you really need if you have a gravity feed water filter, I really believe you need the pre-filter as we come into more troubled and difficult times in the future. So at any rate, the pre-filter is still posted. My books and DVDs, etc., are all posted on the webpage, and those are all available. All of the books are going into reprinting. It was just an amazing thing to see the amount of ordering of my books lately. And I know a lot of people from the misinformation crew are listening to my show. I want to thank them for putting out all the misinformation about Comet Elenin, because it really helped sell a lot of my books. It's helping educate a lot of people. And so I guess keep up the good work, guys. And then finally, people come to my webpage and find out the real story and make the disinformation crew look like a bunch of idiots and fools, and that's exactly what they are. So at any rate, all of the books just selling very briskly, and I suggest if people, many new people every week listening to this radio show, you gotta buy the books and read them and understand them. There's a lot of material there, and it's gonna change your life, the way you see things, the way you understand things. And you're going to understand that the glossy magazines and the glossy cable TV specials on science, exactly what they are, complete misinformation, misguided Tier 2 and Tier 3 outreach scientists that have no clue what's going on in the world around them. But they get their paycheck, and you know, their kids get to go to college, and they get to retire. Okay, so by the way, here's a good question that came in from a listener, and I always try and include a little bit of listener mail. This person purchased one of the ChemRad oil filters, the universal pre-filters, and asked the following question. Is the ChemRad oil filter, the pre-filter, recommended for continuous usage in areas like Minnesota or Georgia or in only specific areas of the U.S. like the West Coast due to events in Japan? Or do you recommend saving it for local emergency only, such as flood, nuclear, fallout on a local basis? And asked me to go into a little bit of detail here. Okay, the chemical radiation filter can be used on a continuous basis. And here's the thing. If you have oil or sludge, you're going to contaminate the powder in the pre-filter very quickly. But if you're collecting nuclear fallout that's coming in from Japan, and I will talk about that very shortly, if you're just interested in filtering out radiation that's coming in from Japan, you can use it on a continual basis, and it would take a very, very long time before you would have to change out the powders. They are renewable, changeable powders that come with the pre-filter. These are food-grade, medical-grade powders that you put in the pre-filter. So at any rate, I want to go into detail on a little bit about radiation. This last week, the U.S. and Canadian health departments who are chartered to monitor radiation in the country both went back to weekly reporting, where they were doing a daily reporting before that. And I've seen these reports, and I really have a very hard time believing them. But here's the point. How would you track radiation coming from a specific points in Japan? Well, first of all, you would put monitors right there. You would look at how much radiation is going up into the upper atmosphere and being carried away. Then you would watch the wind patterns, which are observable through satellite tracking of the weather systems. And then you would follow this radiation, which also can be tracked and mapped. Then you could follow it to across to places like Hawaii, Alaska, the west coast of the United States, Mexico, etc., here's the situation with the jet stream and the wind streams and the rivers of water, so to speak, in the atmosphere. These are like a snake, and they move back and forth, north and south, and they're going to carry this radiation across the ocean. It's not going to fall out in large quantities at any given spot. You need a combination of factors. You need the wind stream that's carrying the radiation, typically attached to dust particles that is in the dust in the air, and the radiation attaches to that. And so now if those dip down far enough and then it rains in the area, if the clouds are releasing and it rains, that area is going to get a boatload if the jet stream is right and the rain is in that area. That particular area is going to get a boatload of radiation. It's going to get what you might call the mother load. And all of the rest of the country at that point will not be detecting anything. But the mother load will be hitting in another place tomorrow. And the next day it will be in another place. Do you see what's going on? And that's why in, for example, Oregon or the West Coast or South Carolina, they will detect radiation in the milk sitting on a table. That's a lot of radiation for the cow to eat it, put it into the milk. The milk gets into a container at the farm, then shipped off, is pasteurized, put in containers, and then there's enough radiation in that milk to be measured. That's a lot of radiation falling out of the sky, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and scientists out there. And so the method of reporting is bogus. What is being reported in the United States and the methods of measuring this are bogus. And so they're using, once again, statistics to lie about the radiation hazard. There's no discussion of accumulation over time. What is the accumulation? And if you don't measure it, you're not going to see it. Gee, what a concept for a scientist, huh? So the government is very much trying to get out of this, and this is a lie. It's like you go into, say, a courtroom, You're told to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And that's anything but what they're doing with the radiation from Japan. So it's not too difficult to understand that there are areas of the country, United States, all the way into Europe, and anywhere around the world, where, now, let's just go back to the nuclear survival guide that was published back in the 1950s, I believe, regarding nuclear fallout from tactical bombs that might have been dropped in Russia. They talk about the wind patterns coming around in the radiation in the U.S. It seems like all of those scientific principles have been lost in the politics of trying to hush up the radiation damage in the United States coming from Japan. So back to the pre-filter, and it was, as with any filter, you cannot guarantee 100% or any percentage of removal. But the point is, you want to try and get as much of it out, or sludge, or whatever you have. The pre-filter is going to do a job for you that you don't want this radiation in your water going into your water filter, because it'll start to accumulate in the water filter and all elements, and once it's there, it's not going to go away. The U.S. is also not reporting the many types of radioactive isotopes that are coming in. Another way of lying. There's a dozen ways to Christmas and back to lie about the radiation coming into this country from Japan, and the government seems to be doing all of them. So back to this fan's question and customer. What should you be doing with your ChemRad oil filter? I would say use it every day. I would say, if, for example, say you have city water, say you have a well, that the rainwater that comes down is eventually going to get down into the water tables. If you're getting water out of a river or a natural surface water, that water is coming, there's runoff from a very large area. So all of that is concentrating into a river, into a lake, into a body of water, a surface water. And so, once again, they're not talking about accumulation. That's a word that seems to, I guess that's a pretty big word for a government scientist to pronounce, accumulation. So at any rate, don't expect that anything educated to come out of the scientists who work for the government. But that's the situation. So I would use the pre-filter all the time. Can you measure this? Measuring radiation is very difficult. People have sent me, here's a radiation measurement site. And I don't believe any of it. Let me give you another example. I did a study on water one time, and I wanted to know the pollutants in water. So I went to the city, and they said, the water is pure. All of our tests pass. And so then I said, who does the testing? Well, you just have to believe us. It's done according to standard testing. And I said, give me the name, and I just like to see what they do. So all they do is check for two things in the water. I forget the chemicals. There's arsenic is one of them. And I said, I would like to hire this company. So I took water samples, and I sent them to the company. And they said, your city already pays us to test this water, and all the tests come back good. And I said, I would like the water tested for impurities. And they said, we only test for the impurities that are designated by law. And so this, you can see where this is going. So then I found out that there are chemical companies that do serious chemical analysis of water. So I took my water samples to them, and I said, I want my water analyzed. And they said, what do you want it analyzed for? And I said, since I don't know what's in the water and what the pollutants are, I want you to analyze it for anything that is not water. And they said, what do you mean? And I said, H2O is the chemical composition of water. I want to know everything in this water that is not H2O. We can't do that, they said. And I said, how can I get the water tested? They said, you have to designate everything that you want tested. So I picked out a number of things that I wanted tested. We don't do it that way. So this, it just turned out to be a royal circus. And so this is the same way with government testing. Remember that all of the pills that people take, the medicines that people take that go into solution in their body, then they go to the bathroom and this goes down into the water system to be so-called cleansed, but those chemicals don't break down. They go into the water table and back down, and so our water tables in the United States are just laced with all of these chemicals, tetracycline from way back, one of the antibiotics of old, and all the way up to the modern species of antibiotics and other types of drugs that people take. All of this ends up in the water table. So when your water looks pure, it probably is not. So the question once again, should you be using the pre-filter? I would say yes. Just use it all the time, because you're not, unless it's visibly plugged up and not passing water, in other words, it's full of sludge or gook or whatever, the goop that comes from, if you're using surface water or plant matter, whatever, then you have to discard the powder and renew it. But so all I'm going to tell people is I think it would be a good idea, because the radiation is going to come into this country and it's going to target certain areas. And tomorrow it'll be in a different area, and tomorrow it'll be where you are. So it's really hard to predict, and there's no reliable government reporting. I personally don't have the time and equipment to go do this. It's a major, major undertaking. So anyway, enough of that. A quick announcement on, let me see if I can pull up this web page. Okay, here it is. Google wants to control your home. Here's the Google misinformation engine that typically refers you to Wikipedia, which is the disinformation information page on the internet. This announcement came in, or this article came in yesterday, that Google wants to run all they want to run telephones, your cell phone, and now Google wants to control everything inside of your home. By the way, along this same note, this came out, I just received this as a notice yesterday, that the Homeland Security now has it set up so that all cell phones in the United States, and who knows, possibly worldwide, are in a network hooked to Homeland Security. So if the president decides he has to issue a national alert of some kind, which many of us believe is imminent here in the near future, given all of the things that are going on, that the president has the ability to text everybody's cell phone in the United States. And so you might be getting a text here from your prez pretty soon telling you about some Homeland Security issue. But understand that the other thing is that means that Homeland Security has a database on everybody and their cell phones. And that also allows them to have a database on where everybody is. Because just even the most rudimentary cell phones, you can determine where that user is, because of the cells, the triangulation of cells. And so you can follow everybody around, and you can believe they have databases and computers that are big enough to handle that amount of data. And the other thing is, they can also, through cell phones, can monitor people through, and you don't know in all of the new cell phones, as in with computers and with all kinds of other devices that you buy, commercial electronic devices, they have bugs in them that can be tapped into at any time. So something that people would need in case of an emergency to communicate, to organize their family or friends, and to find out where they are, is something that would be controlled by the government. And that also tells you that they can shut all of these telecommunication systems off at will, so that they are the only people that will communicate or give you information. Second, here's another article that came in yesterday. Facebook applications leaked user information. So you will not find anything from me on Facebook, and which leads up to the next topic. I do not have anything to do, never did, never will have, I do not have anything to do with the blogs, with the YouTube videos regarding Comet Elenin. I have asked the people that are obviously using my name, using my material, and I will ask again on this radio show that anybody using my name, my material, and trying to, if they think they're promoting me and my material, it's totally incorrect. In fact, it violates the copyright notices on my page. My real fans simply post a statement saying, listen to James McCanney, listen to his radio show, go to his webpage, because that's the only place I post. That's the only place I have ever posted. I don't get into the blog or the YouTube or any of those outlets because it's rampant with misinformation and twists, and I control what I do by my own radio show output and the archives on my webpage. All of my radio shows are archived on my webpage. That's jmccsci.com. Everything is archived there, and my webpage is the only place I point, I post. So let me reiterate, for those people, and the reason I'm doing this on the air is because for the many people watching this Comet Elenin issue, you will see the sites that are really fans of mine go away, and you'll see the sites that are disinformation sites stay. So it's kind of a little social experiment here in the disinformation world. That the people who are my true fans remove any reference trying to interpret my work or trying to talk convincingly to the public about Comet Elenin, and remove all of that and simply put a post, please see Jim McCanney's webpage, and then give a link to my webpage. And we'll see who drops off the air, off the blogs, etc., and who doesn't. And I think it'll be very educational, because the ones that will remain are the ones who are associated with the disinformation campaign to try and ruin my name and science. My science does not predict any kind of disastrous issues with Comet Elenin. Let me make that perfectly clear. Up to a number of weeks ago, it wasn't even clear that Comet Elenin existed. It was registered with the small planet, the Cambridge, Massachusetts registry, and it used amateur data, which it many times does, but NASA, with all the flurry of information and misinformation out there, NASA refused to acknowledge and put out any information other than the orbital data, which it showed on its orbital simulators. And so I personally went out and tried to find Comet Elenin quite some time ago, and I couldn't find it with my rather substantial amateur equipment. And then I noticed that the guy that discovered Hale-Bopp, Alan Hale, has extremely access to very good equipment. He was, in fact, using the 32-inch mirror down in New Mexico, which is publicly available, or semi-publicly available, and at the beginning of just a number of weeks ago, he could not find Comet Elenin. And so this is, it was up until a couple weeks ago, it was not clear that this comet even existed. The basic situation is it's a small comet. If it were Planet X size, it would be visible to the naked eye given its position in the solar system right now. So the best I can determine at this point is Comet Elenin was a small comet discovered in early December of 2010. But the disinformation campaign revolving around Comet Elenin was developed long ago, which tells me that NASA had discovered this comet a very long time ago. It's in the plane of the planets. And the alignment dates would be very well known given the chart of its orbit, And so this could be used effectively as prediction dates, and this is something that the black ops scientists working in conjunction with the secret societies, this is something that they love to do, is to put out information. So at any rate, they and coordinate it with celestial events. And so all of this hype and craziness, now let's look at this again in another light. Back in January, I was a guest on a show, and I was trying to think of which show it was, but I was a guest. And a woman called up as a listener call in and asked if I would give a comment about Comet Elenin. And I just said, she said there was all kinds of hype, and it's the end of the world, and it's going to do all kinds of damage. And I said, I just made a quick comment. I said, there's nothing to it. There's no real information. And I said, it just sounds like somebody trying to hype the internet. But what is very clear now is that the NASA, in conjunction with the disinformation crew, had this misinformation smear campaign aimed at me set up long before the alleged or the public announcement and discovery by a guy named Elenin in Russia. And so they had this these web pages set up to basically associate me with crazy people. And here's how it works. After the all the crazies go crazy on the subject, they let that roll for about a month. And then the white hats, the discover.com and the other white hats, I call them, come riding in to save the day and tell you how all of this crazy internet stuff, there's no truth to it, and NASA is true and honorable and has all the correct information for you. And then, of course, NASA points to Wikipedia, and they say, we don't even look at comets, we don't take pictures of comets, we don't have any equipment to look at comets, and they can move it off to, and then move it off to other third-party disinformation people who can slam me, and not me directly, but this is an interesting point. When you do a search, a Google search on Comet Elenin, you would think, since my name and my work is central to all the discussions on the crazy web pages, on the YouTube videos, you would think that Google would reference me in my web page. It is nowhere to be found. It only references some of the other crazy pages. Then it references NASA JPL. It references Wikipedia and all of the standard disinformation sites. So isn't that convenient? But they don't want to reference Jim McCaney's site because they know I'm slamming them and I'm denouncing all of the things that are going on relative to my name and my work. My work does not predict disasters using Comet Elenin. Comet Elenin, given what the information is and given that it is a small comet, really, there are some electrical alignments, but people are misusing this concept of alignments. And they're talking about gravitational alignments. Let me make something perfectly clear, which I've done before many times on my radio show. Gravity in outer space, when you're moving in outer space, you are gravitationless. You do not feel the gravity. You are moving along a curved line. For example, an astronaut in orbit around Earth is moving the centrifugal force is balanced by the inward centrifugal force, and he feels zero gravity, and that's the same as Earth moving through the solar system relative to Comet Elenin, no matter how big or small it is, and the same vice versa. The Comet Elenin does not feel any gravitational effect other than what are known as very, very small third-order tidal waves, and this is due to the 1 over r squared nature of gravitational force. And so the only force is the differential force on the far and near side of the object, and when objects are far away, that's extremely minimal, much, much less than gravitational force itself. And so literally there is no gravitational effect, and this is one of the major flaws. Many people used to say, oh, there's a gravitational alignment of Jupiter, and we're going to have all kinds of earthquakes. false. We do not feel any more tug from Jupiter than anything else. It's this short-range differential force that can cause tidal waves. That's why the moon causes much bigger tidal waves or tides in the Earth's ocean than the sun. The sun has a small contribution, but our moon, which is much smaller than the sun, makes a much bigger contribution because of its locality, because it's close to Earth. So a great amount of misinformation, misinterpretation, false understanding by people on the internet who do not understand science and are using my information, which I talk in the electric nature of the solar system, etc. I talk about electrical alignments, but they have to be significant electrical alignments. And we could have solar flaring, we could have other things, but for people to start associating this with the New Zealand earthquake or the Japan earthquakes or the pole tilting, all of this is pure garbage. And it is nothing more than an effort than to defame me and my name. And so once again, anybody who's truly a fan of mine, take down any of this reference to Comet Elenin. Simply refer people to the webpage jmccanneyscience.com or the short version jmccsci.com and leave it at that and have listeners listen to me. So anyway, I don't want to waste the rest of my show on Comet Elenin other than it is a non-issue. There was a major disinformation campaign built up to destroy my work and my name. And that's what you see. And by the way, why is this important? Because it's an educational tool. It allows people all of a sudden to realize, yeah, if you look up on Google and you look up Comet Elenin, and everybody's out there on the YouTubes and on the blogs and all this, everybody's referring to McCanny's work. Why doesn't Google refer to McCanny's work? Well, because they don't want you coming here and seeing the real story from my own mouth. They want you to get the misinformation story that's been placed out there to destroy my name. Okay, enough of that. I hope you understand. A couple of weeks ago, I got an email, and there's a new face on Mars, and it looks kind of like a face. It's a head view, side shot. Looks like a guy's ear in the back of his head and stuff. But I want to say something about images within. There's apparently people that go around looking at images of space, surfaces of space objects, looking for heads, and especially on Mars. Let me talk about clouds. If we look on a cloudy day, especially the cumulonimbus clouds, the big bubbly, rolling type of tall clouds that accompany thunderstorms, I remember as a kid sitting there looking up and seeing faces and seeing like the big billowing faces, and you could always, and somebody would say, well, I see a face over there. Oh, yeah, I see that too. You know, and so whether you're looking at rocks or clouds or geological formations, you're always going to be able to find a face. It's one of the most natural things around. I remember sitting in the kitchen looking down at the tile and seeing figures and faces and things like that, and it's just, Your eye is trying to pick out faces and figures, and it's trying to put things together. That's what your eyes and brain do. So it's only a natural event, but the only thing about Mars is I believe that NASA and the real NASA, not the smokescreen NASA that you see, but the behind-the-scenes Tier 1 science has been on Mars with much better equipment than those stupid little rovers. I shouldn't say stupid. I give those guys a lot of credit. But in terms of the technology that should be on Mars, and I'm sure is on Mars, those rovers are like something you'd buy at the toy store. So the point is that instead of looking for faces and pictures on Mars, we should be demanding that we have real scientific packages put on Mars. And the reason they don't want to show you that is because Mars lost its atmosphere only a number of thousands of years ago, and they're looking for traces of civilization there. These are the Tier 1 Black Ops scientists that report to the New World Order, so to speak, the people that run things. Okay, on to a scientific issue. There are ocean plateaus, they're called. And I don't believe I covered this topic before. It's in my notes, so I'm going to cover it. But these are ocean plateaus. And basically, they look like a big plateau, kind of like in the American Southwest, you will see these. All of a sudden, there's a rise in a big plateau, and you go, how did that thing get there? That's a pretty strange formation. What caused that? Well, here's what caused it. Imagine an island, say, like the Hawaiian Islands. As you go out the Hawaiian chain, out the northwest corner, there's the, if you start at the southeast corner, there's the big island of Hawaii, then you go to Maui, then you go to Molokai, then you go to Oahu, then you go to Kauai, and then to Niihau is this other little island. But as you go out the Hawaiian chain, then all of the islands start to become atolls. The islands themselves are very old and have eroded away. But underneath the eroded island is a plateau. And it's the part of the island above the ocean level gets eroded away. And so then that just sits there. And what happens if all of a sudden there's a big calamity, a Planet X type object comes through the solar system and thrusts some of that land upwards? Then, well, that plateau now is above the water line, and there it sits, the structure that was actually built under the water. Or likewise, if the tectonic structures after the object, the celestial object comes passing by, and these would be big Earth-size or larger celestial objects coming through the solar system with a near passage, not a direct hit, but this, which is more common, is a near passage, and that gravitational wave causes the basically a tidal wave in the Earth's surface, and some of them get pushed down under the ocean. So that's where these plateaus come from. But it's very interesting to see that these have to be explained away as somehow the Earth just did this all by itself. So herein lies, I go to international scientific meetings all the time, sometimes 15 to 20,000 scientists at these meetings. The entire body of science there, especially dealing with geology, space science, the physiology of the planets, the surfaces, etc., all of the physical structure of Earth, the weather, etc., all has to be done by the Earth doing all of this by itself. There are band-aid theories after band-aid theories after band-aid theories trying to explain all of these properties of Earth, when the very simple explanation is that these are caused by radical changes, that when large objects come through the solar system, which they have done in the past, which they will do in the future, and I don't give dates, that these major events do occur. But these objects have to come very close to Earth. And if, just to get back to Comet Elenin, according to the orbit that's being given by NASA, this comet is not going to come anywhere near Earth. It's going to be extremely far away. And in terms of those type of gravitational waves, it's simply a non-issue. There again, I have not personally confirmed the orbit of Comet Elenin. I would assume, which you cannot always assume, that NASA and the Comet Registration Station in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you cannot always assume that they're going to tell you the truth. But for all, given that what they're saying is true, Comet Elenin is a small comet, it would be very visible to the naked eye if it were any type of major celestial object. And that's one thing that is very clear, that Comet Elenin cannot be very big at all. Because if it were a small moon size, an extremely small moon size, it would be visible to the naked eye. We can see the planet Mercury very easily with the naked eye all the way from Earth when it sits very near the sun. That's how small an object can be, and you can still see it with the naked eye. So if Comet Elenin had any size at all, it would be visible to the naked eye, and that would have been much more easily tracked and observed when I looked for it myself. So at any rate, you can easily say that given its orbit and where it's supposed to be, it's really, really a very small object. Let's see. I've already talked about some of the fallout issues from Japan. Here's a very... Oh, I want to give credit to Bert Rutan. I just see this article sitting down deep in my pile here. And the Spaceship 2 has gone through many suborbital flights, test flights. This is something that I just have to give these people a lot of credit for. And you makes you wonder what all of the what NASA is up to. NASA's putting the shuttle away in mothballs, and really has no space program at all. And here we have a private entity, privately funded, and making great strides at space planes, which take off from a runway and then come back and land on a runway. What an amazing concept! And this has always been the only way to go into space. Why does this amazingly simple concept escape NASA? Well, remember that for the majority of people who don't understand science, the space shuttle going off is kind of a spectacular thing. It's simply to fool the public. That's all there is to it. By the way, I have buried in my notes here also, I have some notes on RSA encryption. And I'm going to do a show coming up. I've already done shows like this, but I'm going to go into a little more detail on how to break RSA encryption codes. And, of course, the people in the know understand that these are not used anymore by real computing people. But I want to show you how easy it is to break encryption codes based on prime numbers using the work that I did. And just incredibly easy to break these codes. At any rate, that'll come in a future show. Here's an article that, actually a book that was sent to me by a fan, and it's talking about, it's a New York Times, they call it notable book, it's not a bestseller, but it's the untold story of those who survived the Great American Dust Bowl. And this is the, it's called The Worst Hard Time by Timothy Egan. And I'm just going to read some quotes out of here that, as I say, a fan sent me this. And I appreciate things like this. I always like to see people understanding. I'm going to read these passages. Doctors called dust phenomena. In desperation, some families gave away their children. The instinctive act of hugging a loved one or shaking someone's hand could knock people down, for the static electricity from the dusters was so strong. It's a phenomenon called the dust phenomenon. In other words, people would shake hands and get in a tremendously large static electrical discharge. Continue with another one. Here's another passage. A Sunday in mid-April 1935 dawned quiet, windless and bright. In the afternoon, the sky went purple as if it were sick, and the temperature plunged. People looked northwest and saw a ragged top formation on the move, covering the horizon. The air crackled with electricity. Snap, snap, snap. Birds screeched and dashed for cover. As the black wall approached, car radios clicked off, overwhelmed by the static. Ignitions shorted out. Waves of sand, like ocean water rising over a ship's prow, swept over roads. Cars went into ditches. A train derailed. Okay, here's another passage. The kind of strange thing about it, the Weather Bureau observers said, was that it rolled like a mobile hill of crud, and it was black. When it tumbled through, it carried static electricity enough to short out a car. and it hurt like a swipe of coarse-grained sandpaper on the face. The first black duster was curiosity. The first black duster was a curiosity, nothing else. The Weather Bureau observers wrote it up and put it in a drawer. So that's an interesting comment. Okay, here's another comment. The funeral procession, about 50 people in all, was 6 miles out of Boise City, still a ways from the Lucas family plot in Texoma. They had spread out some to let the dust from the chains dragging behind the car axle settle. About 5:15 p.m., they saw a heap of half a mile dirt casting a shadow before them. It was so big and dark as to scare some into the procession into thinking there must have been an explosion someplace, that a mountain range had blown its top. Let me look here. Okay, they call it Black Sunday Duster. The wall looked like it ran for several hundred miles east to west. The top was mostly flat, only slightly jagged at one end. The front was advanced by columns, which billowed ahead of the main storm as if clearing the ground. The Lucas clan argued over what to do. Some people wanted to turn the caravan around and go back to Boise City. Okay. Anyway, I think you get the idea. Let me see if there's one more here. Okay. Cramped as it was, the Osteens tried not to touch each other because of the static, the same kind of electrical energy that caused the windmill to spout a flame from a trailing wire and barbed wire fences to emit blue sparks. But Ike and Oscar were always rubbing elbows, the connection sending a sharp, painful jolt. Okay, anyway, that's about the Great Depression, the Dust Bowl, and electrical discharges between people that happen to be involved in this. I want to make one quick comment on the Discovery Channel special coming up showing a relationship between human and naturalism and nature, and the human planet, it is called. This is part of the New World Order doctrine that there is they call this a natural relationship between man and the planet. And this is part of their belief that they should take the human population down to ground zero, bring it down to ashes and ruin, and then bring it back up where they will gloriously resurrect it into a utopian society. So at any rate, I'm about out of time. Remember to go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. We'll see you next week. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroad. Good night.